Our yoga instructor challenged us to find inner peace. I found it faster than anyone. After 4 seconds, I stood up and screamed, "I found nirvana! I win!" They asked me to leave. I guess they don't respect winning. Bet365 does, though. New customers get $200 in bonus bets just for betting $10. Namaste, losers. Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Almost there. 2 days to go until the NFL draft. The Jets have 2 first-round picks, 4 of the top 44, yada, yada. We all know that. We all know the numbers. It's a chance for the franchise to reshape the roster with high-level talent. And this is our last podcast before it all gets started. On the show, we're going to talk about Darren Mooji's press conference. It just started. Some enlightening information came out of that one. Zach's going to fill us in on all the excitement there. He has his final mock draft out as well. Zach and Paul are going to have some predictions for the draft. So it's going to be fun. I'm Tim McMaster along with Zach Rosenblatt, Paul Kilgallen. Please like the show wherever you're watching or listening. We welcome the baggage handlers, as always, to YouTube. Thank you guys for joining the stream. 5-star reviews all around. How are you guys feeling? You resting up, Zach?
Trying to, yeah. We're almost go time, finally. I mean, the silly season is getting sillier, so we have people, you know, putting down their, you know, putting their foot down on either David Bailey or Arvell Reese. Like, I'm so tired of this debate. It's the same conversation over and over again. We'll get into why I've stuck with Arvell Reese the whole time, and I continue to think he will be the number two pick, but I'm just ready for the draft to be here. I do enjoy like some of the pre-draft season, like mock drafts. I do enjoy. I think people who take them too seriously are annoying. I saw Connor Rogers just release his rankings. Like, there's a lot of final rankings coming out. I think Dane did his full top 300, and just kind of like seeing how all these different experts kind of view guys. And then the flip side is you're also seeing all the national insiders are kind of like making it so every single scenario is covered. I saw now, like, Adam Schefter had the Giants taking David Bailey, which is a new one. So every team has taken every player now. And I think a lot of it's because everybody's guessing what the Jets are going to do. So the Jets have a lot more power this draft than they usually do, which is kind of fun. But I have like less confidence about what will happen at 16. So I think that's like the more interesting thing, I would say.
And you had some fun in your mock draft. We'll get to that in a little bit. How about you, Paul?
Yeah, 16 feels like no man's land at this point. Yeah. Like, it feels like you need to go forward or back in that spot to get something that feels right for the Jets. So, yeah, I mean, I'm with you, man. Silly season is at its full maturity and has probably gone too far at this point. You have people going on TV saying things like, "Well, I really don't know, but I'm still just going to stand on this David Bailey thing like really hard." Like, just admitting they don't know, but then like committing to it. It's very strange. It's almost like people feel like, well, there's 3 days left, so I guess we'll just empty the tank on all the most insane things I can possibly say at this point. So I think we're all just dying for this to just get here and happen already. It really feels like it's been especially long this offseason. So let's go.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Usually it comes quicker.
I was going to say, I feel like pre-draft season, especially right now, it just feels like that scene in It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia where Mac is like, "I'm playing both sides, so I never am wrong," basically. And that's what the draft season is. It's like, well, this team could draft this guy or this guy, or they could maybe not do that. Like, it's like a lot of that. And so like, if you're wrong, you can be like, "Well, I said it was possible they wouldn't." Or if you're right, you'd be like, "Ha, see, I told you so." Like, there's a lot of "I told you so's" that come around draft season. Nobody knows anything at the end of the day. I was just talking about this with Kaz. Like, We all have sources and people who like think things, but like nobody knows who's getting picked, and no team is going to tell a reporter who they are drafting unless it's so obvious that like Fernando Mendoza, like the Raiders don't need to tell anybody they're going to pick him. We all know it. So like the Jets aren't going to turn around and be like, "Hey, Peter Schrager, we're taking David Bailey. Make sure you tell everybody." Like, that's just not what's happening. So like the idea that these teams are telling reporters who they're going, like, they might say, "We like this guy." They might be lying also. So,
and if you say everything on video at one point in time or another, you can clip video of yourself after and say, "Look, see, I was right."
Yeah.
This was the moment when I was right. Don't pay attention to these nine moments I was wrong. It would have been great if somebody had sat, put their hand up for Muji today and just been like, so who are you taking at number two? Nobody asked that question.
I feel like Cos makes that joke at these press conferences sometimes, and they just kind of laugh and then they don't say anything.
Cos. Yeah. We had one fun. Somebody was making fun of your hat. Here you go, Paul. Because we were discussing the hat before. It's a Jets-Bengals merger hat.
Lou, you're not helping. I'm already like, I don't love how this hat sits on my head. You're not helping.
Zach told him to wear that one. There were two options today, and we went with that.
Yeah, I said go flashy.
As far as Muji goes, not much was said. It was 10 minutes of GM speak. He was asked about the canceled top 30, which he said basically, you know, some of these 30s are just smoke screens anyway. They don't mean anything. Basically, don't worry about it. So we shouldn't, according to him, we shouldn't let that little piece of information impact who we think they'll take at number two.
I mean, that was all he was ever going to say. Like, I did appreciate him giving a somewhat like layout of how they view top 30 visits, even admitting that they use them as smoke screens sometimes. So, you know, that gives you just enough plausible deniability that whatever happens, you could be like, well, we canceled it because of this. And so I do think it's weird that they canceled the visit. Like, for a guy at that pick who does have, like, there are some questions about like maturity, I think, because he had some moments in college where he like got into a fight with a cameraman and maybe some other stuff, but you want to get as much information as you can. And they can say that we feel like we gotten all the information we need, but there's a difference between like going to his pro day with a few of your coaches and having them go through the car wash in your building. And so, you know, I don't think I'm going to read too much into it in either direction, but I do think it's interesting. And I mean, some people have pointed this out. I don't think it's necessarily indicative of future, but like last year, I think the only guy that they hosted for a top 30 visit that they, or at least report a top 30 visit, like not all 30 visits get out there, by the way. So people making these declarative statements, like you don't know every one of the 30 visits. But anyways, Arian Smith was the only one out of the reported 30 visits that they drafted last year. I believe they hosted Dean Clark and Jordan Clark too, who they signed. So like, you know, it's possible we put too much weight sometimes into the reported top 30 visits because that might be the smokescreen if it's getting out. But I also am pretty sure they hosted Arvel Reese at some point. So I don't know. It's all just information. You can make it say whatever you want it to. At the end of the day, I do think the Bailey thing was strange. Just as I thought it was strange how everybody simultaneously started reporting it was going to be David Bailey. And so we'll get into this when Paul evaluates my mock draft a little more, but I'm not trying to toot my own horn or anything, and I might be wrong at the end. They might wind up drafting Bailey, but like I've stuck with Arvel Reese this entire process. So like dating back as far as I can remember, at least since my first mock draft after the season ended, I've had it Arvel Reese at number two. That's both reading the tea leaves and from talking to people. And I have not seen anything to change my opinion. I've learned my lesson. And if I'm wrong, then I may have to relearn my lesson. But like I was fully convinced it was going to be Bowers, and I was fully convinced it was going to be Tyler Warren last year. Like I bought into that, and I learned my lesson from that. To where, just because all of a sudden everybody's saying something doesn't necessarily mean that's going to happen. Sometimes it does, fait accompli, as one reporter put it. But I just don't think. I get the idea of Bailey, but like the thing that keeps annoying me, and I tweeted this, sorry for ranting, but like the conversation around this has become, well, David Bailey's pro ready right now to be a pass rusher right away. And you're going to have to develop Arvel Reese and figure out how you're going to use him. That's implying that Arvel Reese is not ready to contribute right away, which I like wholeheartedly disagree with. Like, I think this kid is going to play every down, whereas David Bailey can't play on running downs. Like, he's not a good enough run stopper. You already have an edge rusher who can't play on running downs, Will McDonald. So Arvel Reese is going to be on the field more, and he's better against the run. And how about this? Like, remember when they drafted Will McDonald? One of the reasons Joe Douglas said they drafted him was, well, we're going to have a lot of big leads, so we're going to have an extra pass rusher now. And then they wound up not having any leads, and so they didn't need Will McDonald. He was in an active scratch like early in that season. And the Jets are not going to have a lot of big leads this year. So if the other team is running the ball a lot, like, so how much can you like, I guess you can have one of Will McDonald and him on the field, but then they're just going to run right at that guy. So like, I don't know. I just think Arvel Reese, the ceiling is so high, but I also think the floor is higher than people realize. And I believe in Carl Dunbar, his ability to like get the most out of him. And I think Aaron Glenn, I think Arvell Reese is more of an Aaron Glenn type of guy because you can play him at multiple spots and you can be creative with him and things like that. Anyway, that'll be the end of my
It does feel like the pick that could come back to haunt you more would be them taking Bailey and then Reese becoming, right? Like,
oh, okay, I see what you're saying. Best, yeah, if Reese goes, it's more likely Reese goes elsewhere as a star than David Bailey goes elsewhere and as a star.
Yeah, like David Bailey, great. You took the high end guy that you thought could be like one of the very best defenders in the NFL. And you missed out on this guy who's a consistent like 10 to 15 sack guy. Okay. Your guy didn't, you took the swing and missed. But if you take like the safe guy in Bailey and then Reese becomes, you know, that game changing star, then you look worse. That's not how drafts should work by any means. I'm not saying that. Yeah. I just know how Jets history has gone as far as like picks haunting them. And like, that would be the way to avoid that, Paul.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot Zach just said there that I want to respond to. So let's start with Reese. Like, Reese would be a top 5-10 pick if he was just a linebacker and we weren't talking about him playing edge, right? So, like, he's on the Sonny Styles level in terms of, like, he's so good of a linebacker that he'd be up here regardless. The only reason we're even doubting him in this top spot is because there's this, like, well, he can play this other position thing. And so, like, it shouldn't be viewed as a negative against Reese. It should be viewed as a positive. And so, I've talked myself to the point where I believe that all this Bailey stuff is coming actually from other teams. It's not coming from the Jets building. It's coming from other teams who think they can bully the Jets through the media into second guessing themselves. Like, that's how little respect Jets. That's how little respect the rest of the league, I think, has for the Jets, that they're like, well, if we just keep pumping this out into the media, I bet we can make people start to be like, oh, man, like, should we take Bailey? So that's my tinfoil hat theory on that. As far as the Muji press conference goes, like, I'm not saying this makes him a good GM, but I can objectively appreciate his maturity path in the sense that, like, he's gone from looking very overwhelmed in the media to kind of a seasoned pro at saying absolutely nothing. Like, when you ask that. When you guys asked that question about the Bailey visit, he like laid out every possible answer to the question as like, here's the 25 reasons why we might cancel a top 30 visit. And then he eliminated all of them at the end with, and it could be a smokescreen. So he like said all these reasons. He didn't answer the question, dude.
Without saying why they canceled it. Yeah,
exactly. He just gave you 100 reasons why they could have done it and then invalidated all of them. And so I appreciate that he's kind of like learned how to play the game a little bit. And I think that the Jets building is kind of like learning how to play the game a little bit. And so I don't think any of this Bailey stuff is coming from the Jets. And I think if it is, there's probably a reason for it. And the reason is probably that they're not picking him. And so, yeah, I'm on board with Reese up there at this point. I still love Reuben Bain. I have not wavered on that, but I also like, I'm mature enough and smart enough to know that like Reese is the better player, right? Like it's so, yeah. I mean, I respect you for sticking to your guns throughout this whole like nonsense here.
I'll take the L if I'm wrong, by the way. Like I'll unhappily take the L.
I want to like the one thing he said that was interesting to me, Muji, was he said that they have 225 players above the line, which I assume means draftable players.
These are players
that we think can go in the draft.
Interesting. Yeah.
And then he said we have 135 live cards, which means that out of those 225, there's 135 that they would consider. So that makes 90 that they were like, yeah, they're NFL players, but we don't want them. And when he said it, I was like, okay, like I like that process. That's an interesting thought. Why were Arian Smith and Tyler Barron live cards? Like, that's where my brain just went immediately. I was like, wait, so those guys were live cards?
I can tell you why Arian Smith was, because he ran like a 4.2 or whatever. Like, that's the reality.
Also, with that number of live picks, you definitely run out of live picks, right? So what do you do at that point?
Right. And so
when you try and trade away guys, or if it's just a guy you wanted to get it as a UDFA, then you just draft him kind of thing.
Just grab him.
Reporters generally root for the GM to trade away all seventh round picks, because then we get out of here earlier. I do enjoy the seventh round just like as a fan of the NFL, but the Jets have like 242 or something. Like that's, it's going to be pretty deep into that day on Saturday.
But, it's a little late.
I thought that was interesting too, Paul. And I also liked, Muji likes like laying out the process of how they go through things, which can be like sound kind of boring, but I find it a little interesting where he said we had all the position coaches and coordinators like come through and kind of make their case for guys that they like. I'm curious like how much they factor that in and like how we don't know like the details of what that means or like who's pushing for who. And but like it makes sense to have your tight ends coach come to be like, I like this tight end, this tight end for these reasons, and I think they could fit this way. Like I just think that's smart process as opposed to I think you get into some of these teams and it works well and not as well where it's like the guy who's making the decision is like, well, it's gonna be my decision no matter what. Like Zach Kiefer had a great Raiders story the other week or two ago about the disaster of like the Gruden era where it would be like, I think they called it like a kill video or something. So like Gruden would decide he doesn't like a prospect. So he would just show like a clip of the guy being bad when a scout would like present a player. And then he would just be like, pull up a clip of him being bad in a certain area. And so then they knew that Gruden was never going to draft the guy, no matter how much work the scout had just put in to like show that this guy was good. So like, I do think there are organizations that operate like that, where it's like, okay, we're putting in all the work and then the GM is stepping in and be like, no, I don't want to draft that guy. So I do appreciate their process here, I would say.
And I'm okay with the GM stepping in I don't think the way Gruden was doing it.
That's
poisonous for a room. But like when Muji was saying that, I was interested in like the layer deeper of that. So like, how is that interaction going when the position coaches are presenting it to him? Is it like, is it a back and forth where Muji's sharing his opinion also and Glenn is sharing his opinion also, or are they just simply listening? And I think I would probably prefer the latter there, where they're not trying to influence the room with their opinions. They're simply taking it all in. And they know at the end of the day, it's their decision. So they're going to make this call or not, but they're not trying to influence the room's conversation by inputting their own opinion. So it's almost like they're sitting there as like a review board or a tribunal, and the scouts are just there to present their own cases. And it's just an information collecting exercise. So I would be really interested to go like the level deeper on that and really understand how that's working in the Jets room.
All right, before we get to the mock draft, thanks to Joe Olivo for the kind tip, and then you get your question in for sure. Let's go, boys. Grade my comp. Reese's floor is a souped up Lawrence Timmons. Bailey's floor is Will McDonald.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought of Lawrence Timmons in a long time. I just looked him up. He's 6'1", 242, which is about where Arvell is size-wise. I don't know what Timmons' athleticism was like, but I mean, that's a fun high low. I saw a funnier one, and I'm sure you saw it too, Paul. Is somebody was like his ceiling could be like Micah Parsons, and I've also heard him compared to Isaiah Simmons, like two just wildly different players at different positions. The Isaiah Simmons thing is just that's not even like a scenario, I don't think. I don't know what the floor for Arvell Reese is, because he's such like a unique prospect. There hasn't really been that many like him.
Yeah, he's one of the players that's really difficult to comp, because there's just it's like a unique one of a kind thing. And I think people,
and we don't know if he's going to bulk up either. Like that's if he bulks up, he's probably Micah level kind of guy,
but he's young. So he can. And that's the thing, like that the possibility is there for him to bulk up. But I think everybody just gets magnetized to Micah Parsons, Abdul Carter, and even Isaiah Simmons more because of the tweener aspect than the actual play and what you're seeing on tape, which is like, I don't want to call it lazy, but it's like, it's the easy cheese because nobody knows who to compare this person to.
Yeah.
So I appreciate coming up with Lawrence Timmons as like an alternative to that.
What I'd be curious, and I would need to talk to somebody like in the NFL, like what would somebody who knows this kind of stuff, what would they compare Arvell Reese to if he would decide I'm full-time linebacker? Like, who's his comparison? And then if he's edge rusher full-time, like, who's his comparison? Because I think that would kind of like display why I think I'm so high on him, because if he at his best, if he's this guy and that guy, like, that's pretty unique. So, and I think you could probably aim pretty high on both of them, I would say.
If you can get two players at one player and both of them are really good.
It's kind of like, it's kind of like the Travis Hunter thing, only the guy's not going to be playing both sides of the ball. Like it's like he's you're doing like the Shohei thing a little bit, but it's just within defense. So,
yeah, I will say somebody just commented in the chat, Golston, and I can't remember if I said this on this podcast or a different podcast because I do too many. But so I dug up an old scouting report on Golston. Did I tell you guys this?
No.
So I went like deep on the internet and I found a really old scouting report from Vernon Golston. And it was essentially from an NFL scout that wasn't a Jets scout at the time, but it was like, Vernon Golston is a dog who regularly embarrasses his coaching staff and himself with his effort on the field. And like, dude, it was scathing. It was a horrible scouting report.
Well, that was the thing with him was effort, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, wait a minute. So the Jets knew this and they did it anyway. And so
the thought is we can motivate him.
Right.
Like that's a coach's curse. They think they could fix anybody. Yeah.
And so I'm guilty of seeing a big athletic dude in an Ohio State uniform playing on the edge and being like, oh my God, Vernon Golston. But after digging into it, I'll just say, I don't think that's fair because you've never heard a whiff of that with Reese.
Yeah. And actually Vernon Golston was actually quite productive in college. If you look, I just looked up his college stats, he had 8.5 sacks and 14 sacks. So like, if anything, statistically Arvell is more raw, but Vernon was just a freak athlete, and then he was going against people who were smaller than him in college, is my guess. And then he got 0 sacks in the NFL. So, but yeah, I just the Vernon and Arvell thing. It's just because they're the Jets, and like you said, it's Ohio State edge rusher. They're not comparable. Like it's very possible Arvell Reese doesn't pan out. Like that absolutely is a scenario that could happen.
But it won't be for the same reason.
Yeah, exactly. Like his motor is one of his toughness and his motor is one of the things in his effort level. That's like one of the first things you see on a scouting report. And when you watch his film, you see it too. So,
all right, mock draft time. Final one. This is Zach's mock draft. Zach, did you do anything differently going into this one or same typical?
What I did differently is that I stressed about it for like 3 days. I did like my initial one. I'm like, I like this. And then I kept like second guessing myself and I changed things like all the way down to the last pick in the draft. I changed like 3 times. I did make a trade early in this one, as you'll see. I traded back, not up. And we'll discuss like the trades and stuff like that. But yeah, I don't know. I felt pretty good about this. The hard part about doing mock drafts is like you get in your own head about what you think they should do. And you maybe don't think about like what they will do. And so if I made a mistake in this one, I had two pass catchers in their first 4 picks. And I think that is something I absolutely would do. And I think they should do. Do I think they will do it is the question. I'm less certain, but I think it's possible at the very least. And that second round is always more fun for me because you just don't know who's going to fall. That's kind of where you can take a swing on somebody like, or there's whatever, like that's where a lot of your favorite prospects wind up being a second day 2 guys. And so it's a lot more fun to pick those, but I just could not decide because you can make a case for almost any position in the second round, especially besides probably quarterback. I guess you could say Ty Simpson, offensive tackle would be the other one. Like that's, you could make a case for just about any position. I might not agree with it, but like you can make a case for corner, tight end. I mean, maybe not running back, I guess, but like, I don't know if they drafted Jadarian Price, then maybe that means they're trading Breece Hall. Like I that's why this draft is kind of fun to project and also very stressful. So for someone who overthinks these things.
2 clarifying questions for you. Number 1, were you in an active sim where players were getting taken away from you off the board, or were you looking at a big board and saying this player should go about here? So did you have that freedom or were you in a sim?
I did a combo of those 2 things. So I like used PFF sim and I did like the consensus board, but like when it got to the pick, I kind of looked at like Dane's rankings and like who was available in the general range of where I was or people who were projected for a round. So like I did a 3rd round pick was Kieron Crawford. He wasn't available in the sim I did, but like most of the projections I see have him ranked around that range, if not a little bit earlier. So that I kind of like did a combo of those 2 is what I would say.
Okay. And my other clarifying question was you had a really good, I thought, interesting trade back in the first round with a trade partner that we haven't heard a lot about. And so, number 1, I thought that was brilliant. Number 2,
did you
I'm assuming you balanced out the trades with like trade value charts and everything like these are real?
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, so did you talk to Popper?
I should have. Well, I know. I mean, I talk to Popper all the time and I know the Chargers won it. They really like the idea of drafting, I think, Vega or however you say it, from Penn State. And yeah, they need a guard. They need Ioane. They need a guard pretty badly. They have a 3rd round pick. The Jets do not. And so the point value, I believe, if I remember correctly, you take the Jets You take the 22, which is, I believe, where the Chargers were, their third round pick, which is 80 something, and a fourth round pick next year. And it almost adds up like even, or if anything, the Jets get a little more value out of it because of that fourth round pick like that. So point value wise, it's kind of perfect.
That's why I thought it was so smart, was because it was not just like, oh, this is a great trade for the Jets. It was, there was reasoning for the Chargers to get ahead of another team. Like, yep. I think, there's another team right there, the Lions, who really needed
Lions who won
offensive line. So that's who you got to get in front of. So it just made a lot of sense kind of in every direction.
Thank you.
All right. So number two, you took Reese. We've discussed that. We won't go into that anymore. And then we just talked about the trade a little bit, but the Jets trade number 16 to the Chargers, and they get 22, 86, and then a fourth rounder next year. And then we can jump to 22 then, where you mentioned the receivers. And I will say, I think in your last mock, you did have Ty Simpson somewhere, didn't you, to the Jets?
No.
Maybe that was two mocks ago. I don't
know. Maybe I did. Yeah. I think I believe I had him at 33, and like the comments on The Athletic were like, you're an idiot. How dare you draft him there? So I also don't think that's going to happen. So
number 22, Omar Cooper, wide receiver of Indiana. And the theory being like you said off the top, Paul, 16 is like no man's land for receivers, right? You got to be higher to get the real upper echelon, and then being a little lower helps you out with like maybe the second tier that's still first round caliber receivers. Oh my goodness.
All right, I'll go. I was going to say, like, I do think it's possible Mekhi Lemon falls to 16. I don't entirely know how the Jets feel about him. He does feel like an Aaron Glenn type of receiver to me. But like if all three of those guys are gone and Vega is available at 16, I mean, it's possible the Jets pick him. I don't think they will, but like, it just makes sense to me to trade back and pick it doesn't have to be Cooper. It could be Denzel Boston. Like, I just think that's a better range for those receivers. And you pick up a third round pick. I wouldn't say I have like a lot of confidence that a team's going to trade up to 16, but I just think it makes a lot of sense for where the Jets are at and to pick up that extra pick and things like that. I do think the flip side is very possible, where the Jets try and trade up. And one of my predictions is involved with that, so I won't step on that. But that's just kind of where my thought process was. Like, if they're definitely picking a pass catcher there, I wouldn't say they're definitely, but I think it makes sense. Trading back makes sense. Or if they're going to pick a position that'll make Jets fans angry, like corner, which I think is possible, I think it makes sense to trade back there as well. Because this cornerback class, there's some intriguing guys. I don't think there's any that I like at 16, though.
So I just heaped a lot of praise on you for that trade. Now I'm gonna hit you with the other side of it. I'm not sure Venga's there at 16 even make.
He might
that
not
trade.
Be. I'm less confident now that he will be. By the way, like, I think the Giants might pick him.
I'm also not positive Cooper's there at 16. There's a world where Cooper's gone before 16. So yeah. I think if this trade does come to fruition, I think it's probably more likely that it's Boston at 22 than it is at Cooper at 22. Yeah. But if Cooper's there, I love the pick. I would be okay with Boston because he's got a different body type for what the Jets roster needs. But as far as Cooper, the player goes, Connor compared him to Emeka Egbuka in our draft guide. And
I saw that, yeah.
Dude, if you can get that, I think everybody would be thrilled with that. He had 500 yards after the catch in college. Yeah. Pons compared him to Devontae Adams in a pre-draft interview at one point. And so that's something that Jets fans are going to love to hear. Not the Devontae Adams that we had, but the one earlier in his career from the Packers. And he's like, he's got really good body control. He just goes up and makes play, and he's kind of making up for like some shorter arms and a smaller frame where you don't think he's going to be able to get to balls, but he does. He's got like short area burst where he can just make adjustments and get to balls that you didn't think were possible for him. And I think like the big point here is, you know, people who are going to defend Aaron Glenn will oftentimes bring up certain things. And one of the things that we'll bring up is that video clip of him on the Lions talking to his defense and being like, you know, how many games did you lose in college? And like talking about needing to bring a winning mentality to that building in Detroit. And like, talk about bringing a winning mentality, like getting a guy who just won a national championship and inserting him into this offense and kind of teaching the veterans around him how to be a winner, I think is another big like feather in the cap there for that pick. So if all the pieces can fall into place for the Jets to get Omar Cooper, whether it's at 16 or 22 in this trade scenario, I think that's a home run.
All right. Number 33, they go cornerback, Colton Hood. Tennessee and not Pons at that point. And I assume Pons was available, Zach, and you chose to go this direction, which maybe moves you one out over Glenn, if that's the room, right?
Yeah, I do think they like Hood. I don't know that I'm 100% confident he makes it to the second round. It seems like McCoy might be dropping quite a bit because of his injury stuff. I don't know if the Jets take a flyer on McCoy or not, because that's pretty risky for a hot seat coach. But out of the second round corners, like I could see them landing Hood, Pons, or Chris Johnson from San Diego State are the three that I feel pretty good about. I've seen that guy, Brandon Sisse, C-I-S-S-E. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it. I've seen them tied to him a lot. I haven't really heard as much about that, but I just, again, this is going to be, I'm not going to step on, I can always make new ones up, but I do think they take a corner at some point relatively early. So, I mean, Hood is a guy that, you know, I don't know. My thing is, if they believe one of these corners can be a number one corner one day or be better than the guys they have, then I kind of get the idea of taking it. I wouldn't take one in the first round, especially if you're just taking a corner with the pick you traded Sauce Gardner away for. Then I don't think that guy's just always going to be compared to him. And I just don't think that's the right way to go about it. But I do think they pick a defensive back, if not a corner. Like, I could see a safety, but I like the idea of Hood at 33 value wise. And that's more of a what I think the Jets will do more than what I like would do, I would say.
Yeah. So I am starting to become very anxious with the feeling that the Jets are picking a corner with one of these first four picks. And like, it's just like, I get it, but it's just not what we want from the fans. And so I'm trying to get myself to more of a comfort place with it. And if you're looking for the good things about Colton Hood at 33, number one, he's 20 on Connor's big board. So it's tremendous value if you're getting him at 33. Yeah. We'll start there. He is like scheme agnostic, you can call it. So like, he can play man, he can play zone. I think at times you'll want to see a little bit of like maturity with him in terms of, hey, go after the ball instead of playing the receiver, which I think we saw with Sauce a lot, where he was so focused on the receiver and he was not playing the ball. And because of that, he was not taking the ball away. And so I don't want to compare him to Sauce. That's not a good comp for him, but like, I think we'll see a little bit of that. But I think the difference between him and Sauce, and the reason that fans might not like this pick out of the gate, but he will endear himself to fans, is that he hits really hard. He plays really tight. He can play and run support. And he's like super, super physical. He can knock receivers off their spot when they're trying to get through his lane. And so he's a fun player in that regard. And I think he will endear himself. He's got like dog mentality, ferocious defender. And he's not going to get burned. He's got a little bit of like, his speed is really smooth, so he can get a really good double move thrown on him by a receiver who's like twitchy and fast. But again, this is all stuff that he can kind of mature with in terms of playing the ball and getting a little bit faster in his reactions. So I think it's a pick that Jets fans will struggle with if it happens, but eventually they'll like him.
Number 44, Jeremy Bernard, wide receiver, like you had mentioned.
I did, yes.
There, Zach, from Alabama. Two receivers in the top 44 picks.
So I went back and forth on this, as I said. But where I landed and why I picked Bernard instead of, I originally was going to go for someone like Chris Bell or somebody with a little more size. But what I decided is like, the Jets just need to like get the best possible receivers. Like I get the idea of like picking body types and stuff, but like, based on Jets history, and I know you don't operate this way when you're making draft picks, but like, there's a chance that one or both of them won't work out. So like, going in assuming, okay, we got Omar Cooper, so we know he's going to be great. I don't know that you can necessarily do that. So what I do, you just get as many good receivers as you can and you figure out the rest later. I do think Bernard, for like what the goals are for the Jets this season and in the immediate future, competence. Like, that's what I keep saying. Like, their goal is competence. Like, I don't know that there's a receiver that fits that better than him. And if you're talking like, we need someone who can help us right away, he can help right away because he's a really good route runner. He's actually a pretty good athlete. He had like one of the best three cone drills in the entire combine. Doesn't have great size. So I've seen a lot of people saying him and Cooper are the same. I don't think they're the same. I haven't dove into them as deeply as you know, people like Connor and stuff like that. But I just think he's just a solid NFL wide receiver. Everybody compares him to Robert Woods, who had a long career being a solid NFL receiver. And the Jets the Jets, it's like either home run or a strikeout usually with them at wide receiver. And I think it's okay to hit a double also. And so this was like a double as opposed to taking a swing for Chris Bell, which I think there's some logic there. If you have Omar Cooper, you have Garrett Wilson, you have A.D. Mitchell, that fourth guy, you can take a little bit of a bigger risk, maybe him or like Ted Hurst or whatever I've seen thrown around a lot. But I'm more just get good players on offense and build the best possible supporting environment for whoever you drop in at quarterback next year. And I think you do that by getting a reliable wide receiver in him and a receiver in Omar Cooper who makes plays after the catch. And then you have Garrett Wilson who does a little bit of everything. And then A.D. Mitchell is the big body down the field weapon. So I really like that group if it's that four.
So I'm not trying to trap you guys here, but do you know where Jacoby Myers was drafted offhand?
Was it third round? Was it third round?
He wasn't drafted. Trick question.
There you go.
So he got compared to Jacoby Myers in our draft guide. And Jacoby Myers is a player that Jets fans have been begging to trade because he's been available twice in the last
years.
And we were begging to go get him because he's like he's a lunch pail receiver. Like he'll just do whatever you ask him to do. He's pretty physical. He doesn't have like these insane measurables or anything, but he just kind of like gets the job done. He's gritty and he finds a way to get open and he finds a way to do what he needs to do. And Jeremy Bernard is a similar player to that. Like he ran a really good three cone, which we've talked about as a high predictor for success in the NFL. And he just like kind of like does whatever he's asked. He's really good in the run game. He can block. He can do all these different things. And so if you frame it in that way of like, hey, there's a way for the Jets to get a receiver like Jacoby Myers potentially at this pick because, you know, Jacoby Myers went undrafted. Jeremy Bernard is not. He's going in the second round. And so like somebody's going to be able to be the benefactor of that. And so he kind of fits right in at this slot. Like he's right in that mid 40s range in terms of valuation on consensus boards. So like, yeah, go grab the guy. And if you're going to do a double dip at wide receiver and this is your second one, that's a really, really good spot to be in for the Jets.
Third round, which the Jets didn't have, but thanks to your trade, Zach, they now do. The Chargers pick at number 86, Keyron Crawford, another edge. So two wide receivers in the top 44, two edges in the top 86.
Yeah, and it's kind of like the same thought process I had even taking a second receiver there. It's the Jets have had stretches where they thought they were loaded at pass rusher, and then all of a sudden they had none. So like the Hassan Reddick experiment like blew it all up. Like they were pretty deep before that. Bryce Huff, JFM, Carl Lawson, Will McDonald, like they were loaded. And they don't have enough pass rushers on the roster that I can look at and be like, that's a long-term guy. Like Arvell Reese, yes, you drafted him number two. He might play a little bit of linebacker and edge rusher that first year. I think that Will McDonald is, you know, he's probably only playing on passing downs and he also isn't signed beyond next season. Kingsley Anagbare, 1 year deal. Joseph Asai, I think, is a solid two or three edge rusher. So I like taking a swing on a guy who's like a pretty souped up. He's doesn't have as much experience, but by all accounts, everybody thinks he's going to be able to contribute right away, like as a pass rusher. And so that was like a value slash positional value slash place in the draft. And just what I think the Jets should be doing. Cause if you have a bunch of good pass rushers, then when one of them gets hurt, your whole season isn't over. And also just like in the third round, where things were at, like for me, it was between that and drafting a safety there. Like I probably would have gone like Bud Clark from TCU. I just don't think safety is going to be as much of a priority for them in this class. I could be wrong. And you'll see based on where I have the only safety they drafted in my projection, that was the hardest decision I made, honestly, is like where to put a safety. But you trade for Minkah Fitzpatrick. I do think I think we've all forgotten about Malachi Moore a bit because he was up and down last year, but I do think they really like him. You sign Dane Bell in, you bring back Andre Sisco. And we're drafting a corner in this projection as well. So I don't think safety is as much of a priority as like bringing an edge rusher that can help.
Yeah, safety room's really crowded. I think we all want one, but where does it happen and how much asset value are you going to assign to it is the question. Bud Clark would be a fine pick here. Here's what I'll say about Keyron Crawford. He's 72 on our big board, so getting him at 86 is good value. And you mentioned the lack of experience. He didn't start playing football until he was a senior in high school. Yeah. So this is very much a player that NFL teams are looking at as, hey, he's just learning how to play the game now. And if he looks this good at Auburn, how much more room is there for him to grow? And so like, if you teach him a bag of pass rush moves, and if you teach him how to read what he's seeing instead of just react to it, That's like what you're gambling on with him. And so in terms of how the Jets edge room, and he would probably be like a stand up outside linebacker in a 3-4 type deal. In terms of how that room looks right now, he would be an intriguing add to that room of like, hey, well, here's a different guy that we actually might be able to buy low on and kind of build him up and put him with Carl Dunbar and teach him how to play the position.
All right. The next pick is interesting. Fourth round, 103. You have Sam Roush, who a tight end played for Frank Reich at Stanford. So there's obviously that knowledge base.
Yeah. So this spot was where I debated quarterback. It would have been Drew Aller I was basically deciding between Aller or Roush, and I decided on Roush, and I could go either way on that. But I just like the idea of loading up on talented players on offense. I don't think Jeremy Ruckert obviously has shown enough to where you can be like, he's our no doubt number two tight end, and we feel confident going into the season that he's going to be, you know, good pass catcher and blocker. Like I don't think he's shown. I think he was a lot better last year broadly, but he's still like a backup tight end at his ceiling. And I think Sam Roush's ceiling is starting tight end in the NFL. Frank Reich knows him better than anybody. I think he's somebody that would pair pretty nicely with Mason Taylor. Like you could play them both at the same time or one at a time. And they both are solid blockers and pass catchers. Like they're not going to, you know, they don't have like game breaking athleticism or anything like that. But I don't know, like the idea of adding three pass catchers within the first four rounds in this draft, for me, we're building the roster. When I say we, like as someone doing the drafting, like we're building the roster for not just this season. And so if I look ahead to next season and you really like what you see out of Roush and these two receivers and, you know, Adee Mitchell takes the next step and, you know, whatever happens at running back, like that's like as good of a supporting cast as the Jets have had in a long time here. So I just like the idea of both making a pick that is making the team better now and also a building block maybe for the future in the fourth round. And I say that because like Drew Aller, if you draft him, I mean, it's the Jets, so he probably would play. All their quarterbacks would get hurt because they always do. But like best case scenario is Drew Aller doesn't play a single snap for you this year. Mm. And if you're drafting him, you have to believe that he has the ability to develop into like a pretty good player down the line. And so they might believe that and they might draft him in the fourth round. But I just felt like for me, it would make more sense to get somebody who's going to help me right now while also potentially, you know, maybe he's better than Mason Taylor a year from now. Like if Mason doesn't take the next step, you know, that can't be ruled out. And I like the idea of like this guy's ceiling is starting NFL tight end and we got him in the fourth round.
Yep. Big, big value pick. So it's becoming a very popular mock pick for Jets fans. Badlands is putting out their final mocks, I think, tomorrow. And I'm pretty sure he's in Joe's. I think he's in Connor's also. And so like the two main guys have him there. I'll read you a line from our draft guide. And we have a tight end specialist that does all of our tight ends for our draft guide. So he's like, it's all he does. It's all he focuses on. And the first line says, Sam Roush is about an inch of arm length away from being a first round pick and my tight end one in this class. But he could potentially fall into that 100 range because of that arm length. He's kind of like a throwback old school tight end, which has all but vanished from the NFL. And I think teams are really thirsty to get back to that and to like go find those guys. The comp we have for him in our guide is Frank Wycheck, which is
nice.
Most people will remember from the
Titans,
the whatever miracle that was called in the playoffs with the
Music City Miracle.
Kevin Dyson was the receiver, I believe. Yeah,
exactly. So, you know, he's a guy that can kind of do it all, but he'll get caught in the wash sometimes because of those arms when he's doing things like blocking and he's getting yanked around by stronger linebackers and safeties that are covering him and things like that. So this is a player that like kind of despite his deficiencies looks really, really good. And there's some familiarity with Reich, which I think is why it's becoming a popular mock. And so but don't forget, Brock Bowers had a lot of frame concerns a couple years ago too. And so sometimes you just come across these guys that kind of defy all odds, even when they have this physical shortcoming. And so, you know, huge value pick at 103 if he's there.
140, still in the fourth round. Fabecchi Wiwu, guard out of Oklahoma. So finally adding to the offensive line.
Yes, I do think it's important. I'm not as convinced they're going to add one early as I think a lot of people are, just because I think they believe in the starting five they have maybe more than seems like Jets fans do. So like, you know, I mean, they didn't spend a lot of money on Dylan Parham and they didn't spend a lot of money on Josh Myers. So there's like room there if you add somebody that you believe can be a starter. But I don't know that who they draft in the second round is going to start as a rookie necessarily. So that's like, if Chase Besantis is a popular one, I see. I'm not 100% confident they would plug him in as a starter right away. Maybe they would. But I like a guy like this who can play center and guard. I think just reading his scouting report, he's like a mauler more than an athlete, which I think is fine. Like they want to be like a really good running team. And so they need to get into a better habit of developing offensive linemen on day three. And I don't think they've done a good job of that over the years, not just this regime, past ones too. And so I like the idea of adding him. They clearly like their offensive line from last year because they brought back every single one besides AVT and Simpson. Like, re-sign Max Mitchell, re-sign Chukwuma Okorafor, re-sign Xavier Newman. Like, I think they kind of just want to run it back, but I think adding some depth on the interior is important.
First of all, flowers to Tim for the name pronunciation.
Yeah, that's good.
Well done. Clearly researched
how well I can do when I use Google before we start podcast.
So I think like the thing with Wee Woo is, you know, he played all five offensive line spots at different points in his college career. So he's projected as an interior at the NFL level, but he's 6'4" and a half. Like he's big enough and he's got experience at all five spots on the offensive line. So that's great. We had a caller leave a voicemail on one of our shows this week, kind of like lamenting the fact that the Jets have to use premium picks on these spots all the time that they shouldn't have to. Linebacker, safety, interior offensive line. They have to keep doing it because they can't find these guys later and develop them. This is the type of guy that you could get later that you could feel really good about if you can turn him into something, because he's got the mentality, he's got the positional flexibility, he's got kind of like the motor to do what he needs to do at the NFL level. What you need to teach him is the technique, and you need to refine his skills a little bit. And so if you can get him in a good program and get him to the point where you don't need him to start right away. That's the beauty of it all. If you can get him to a point where he can be a serviceable swing year one, and then you can work him into a starting offensive lineman year two, that's a great pick.
All right, final three picks we'll group together here. At 179, Red Murdoch, linebacker out of Buffalo. 228, Cole Wisniewski, safety, finally a safety out of Texas Tech. And then 242, they finally get their quarterback, Baron Morton out of Texas Tech.
Yeah, so I'd say out of that group, I think Red Murdoch has just become one of my favorite prospects in this draft. And I'm not going to pretend like I've watched like film of him, but that's a number one. That's a pretty amazing name just for a linebacker in the NFL. And he, like,
look at this top five name.
Yeah. Top five name.
Should be Red Murdoch.
Like it doesn't sound Red like Murdoch. A football player. I don't even know. Like it sounds like a guy, a cowboy in a Western or something. Mm-hmm. But he forced 17 fumbles in 3 years, which is like a FBS record. Like if you're going to take a swing on a linebacker in the third round, I don't love doing that a lot of times because they just usually wind up being special teams guys, and I get that. But I like, he's kind of a playmaker. So if you can really like get into that and find a guy who can force some turnovers, I don't think there's anybody behind Sherwood and DeMario Davis that I feel like 100% confident in depth wise. Like I think they like Kiko and Marcelino as like special teams guys, but they could use another linebacker. I do like the idea of Jacob Rodriguez in the second round, by the way. I just couldn't bring myself to do it. But, and then the last two, Wisniewski, they hosted for a top 30 visit. I figured swing for some depth in the seventh round. And Morton is a guy they've done a lot of work on. They've done a lot of work on all the quarterbacks. I figured I wanted to walk away from this draft with a quarterback, and I just couldn't find the right spot. I consider Cole Payton in the fifth round as well. Briefly considered Nussmeier earlier, but I just don't see that like size fit wise. So I went with Morton as a guy who can like compete with Bailey Zappe to be the QB3 is kind of what I thought.
So we'll go in order here. Red Murdoch, we covered how good his name is. we have a trait in our draft guide called Chaos Agent, which is just like he just creates havoc on the field. Murdoch had 17 career forced fumbles at Buffalo. He broke Khalil Mack's record at Buffalo, who had 16 over the course of his career. I think you mentioned it, Zach, in your article that was an FBS record as well. And so he's just a guy that, like, I'm not saying he's a starting linebacker out of the gate, but this is a guy, if he could do that same thing on special teams and then develop his linebacker skills a little bit more over the first, you know, year and a half, call it, in the NFL, and he could work his way into being a spot starter or something like that, that's like a mentality that you'd like to have on the field. Somebody who's just going after the ball like a maniac and trying to rip it out. Wisniewski, I found a comp out there for Wisniewski, which I'm hesitant to even say on a microphone, but somebody comped him to Reed Blankenship in terms of just like, hey, like this is a really good...
In terms of being another white safety, you mean? Yeah.
Well, that's like the annoying thing with like the white players at certain positions. Like the guy, the H-back from Navy, Eli Heidenreich, like, dude, it's so frustrating. Like every comp out there is like, oh, Julian Edelman, you know, McCaffrey, like Danny Woodhead, right? Like, it's just like, come on, guys. But the Wisniewski comp was more about like being a box safety who's got adequate enough coverage skills that like you don't think you're going to die if you put him in the lineup one day because of an injury or whatever else. And so to me, it felt a little bit like Tony Adams-ish, but like a little better. Or maybe what we thought Tony Adams could be before we actually saw NFL tape of Tony Adams, where it became very frustrating very quickly. In terms of Bear Morton, this is the first one I'm really going to knock you on. So according to our big board, all of your picks were very valuable picks, except this one. Connor has him at 278. You took him at 242. He was down below in our quarterback rankings, below the likes of Diego Pavia, Cade Klubnik, Haynes King. So like he's pretty deep down there for us in terms of he's
probably UDFA. Yeah.
And he's been hurt a lot. So like there's that concern also. Now, that being said, people liked what they saw on tape with Morton a lot. Like people saw something when Morton was playing that was just like, I can't really put my finger on it, but I like it. He's mobile. He can't really throw a deep ball. So he's like a little bit better of a version of Brady almost. Brady Cook. Sorry. I should not have said Brady without saying his last name there. That was very vague. He's like a little bit better of a version of Brady Cook, I think. So in terms of like a camp arm, third, fourth guy, fine. Right. It really doesn't matter at that stage of the game. But I think that there are probably other options that you'd consider before Morton, unless you're just like, hey, I really loved what I saw on tape and I'm willing to overlook the injury thing.
All right, so that is the mock draft, the final mock draft from Zach before this. The Badlands one comes out when, Paul? I know you're drinking water.
So it came out on Sunday night. However, there's like 175 reports in it right now, which is over Muji's 135 live cards, actually. But it's not yet to the 225 above the line. We're hoping that by the time Thursday rolls around and like you're sitting with it in front of the draft, that we have about 230 players in there.
Nice. So check that out as well. If you have The Athletic, check out The Beast. We've talked about that plenty. We are almost there to the draft. Final thoughts, guys. We went longer on that mock than I thought we would. Final thoughts before we convene after round one.
Are we doing our just, three big predictions?
Yeah, I'll just fire them off all together and then you could say what yours were. All right. And then we can see if we were right. So I'll say mine are that they draft a corner with one of their first three picks. Mm-hmm. I said that if they trade up, it'll be for Jordan Tyson, not Carnell Tate. And I said that they'll draft a kicker and a quarterback on day three.
Oh, wow. Zach, you and I have a brain melt going on.
Oh, yeah, you had some of the...
So my three, and I tried to make mine a little like aggressive. Three out of the first four picks are going to be defense. And I think everybody needs That's to good. Start wrapping their head around that now. My second one is at least two trades, potentially three, and one of them is going to involve an active NFL player. So two will definitely be pick swaps, things of that nature. And then there's going to be a trade with an active NFL player as well. And my third one, this is where we're overlapping here. I put they are either going to be taking a quarterback or a kicker. One of those two things will happen.
I thought about doing it like that too, but I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to say they take both. They should draft a kicker. Like, why not? Just do it.
Did you think about going kicker in your mock?
I did. I originally had a kicker with the last pick, and I'm like,
which one?
I don't know. I had the not Trace Mack, the guy who's ranked like the second, like the one from Iowa, Drew Stevens, I think his name was.
Okay. Yeah. So he's in the guide. I put four kickers in the guide. So I prepared for this this eventuality. So there's four kickers in the guide. I think it's Smack, the Michigan kicker.
Yeah.
The Iowa kicker and the BYU kicker are in the guide.
All right.
We're ready. Let's do it.
Thursday night.
Thursday night, we'll be back. We'll, who knows when, depending on, especially with them, the possibility of them trading back deeper into the first round. But Zach, keep us honest as far as when we've learned over the years, like basically once they say Muji and Glenn are speaking, you know, they're done for the night and we'll plan from there.
Where are you at on Thursday night, Zach?
Like what's right where I am right now. We basically sitting here, are they, the press conference room, they play the draft on the TV in there. And then, you know, once they're coming, they'll either text us that Muji and Glenn are on their way or they'll announce it as they are here. And we also usually get the prospect over the phone too. And they kind of do it like really back to back. So it's really like, I have to write, I have to get that stuff done. And then I also do the pod. So it's an adrenaline rush. So I do really enjoy the draft, but at the end of the night, it's like 2 a.m. I'm driving home and I'm pretty tired. And I got it. And then you do it all over again the next day and it's fun. And then you're tired. And then Saturday comes, but it's like a 3-day rush of interviews, press conferences, stories, and podcasts, obviously. So
are the Jets providing the food for you guys on Thursday night?
I believe they are. Yes, they do. They do feed us well. I appreciate that.
All right. We'll have to get an update on what the food is. And why don't you stay in a hotel?
I'm sure Connor Hughes' Instagram account will have a full spread of the.
Big Shot Connor is going to be on the SNY show tomorrow, so he won't even be, or Thursday, so he won't.
Oh, he's not even be there.
Yeah, but I don't get a hotel because it's only like a 35-40 minute drive to me, especially at 2 a.m. when I leave here. The drive's not too bad, but I know some people. I think Connor does that. I know Samini does. Like I think some of the guys just do that because it's so late.
All right. It's going to be a lot of fun. Thanks for joining us today. Please tune in the rest of the week as we come back with reactions to day one, day two, and then next week we'll have the full reaction to the draft class. Thanks for tuning in to Flight Plan.